Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
Day 7 in Haiti. The waiting now is much of a disaster as the earthquake 1 week ago.
I've seen so many people who passed away in front of my eyes, and so many dead people. And so right now, all we need is help. We need help. We're crying for help.
The cries for help, some get louder, some get angry, some go silent. Haiti's outstretched arms, the international community's overstretched aid effort. On The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning, everyone. It's Monday, January 18th, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Happy holiday to everyone. I'm here with Miles O'Brien in all week for Celeste Headlee, who's vacationing. Good morning, Miles.
Good to be here, John, and happy holiday to everybody. Let's get right to the top stories we're following for you this morning. Explosions and machine gun fire rattling the city of Kabul this morning. A group of Taliban militants tried to storm the presidential palace and other government buildings just as President Karzai was swearing in his new cabinet. The militants fanned out, taking up positions on rooftops before Afghan troops were able to take some control of the situation hours later. Officials say at least 5 were killed, nearly 40 wounded, 7 of the attackers also killed. The situation is ongoing. We'll keep you posted. On to Haiti now, where thousands more U.S. troops are expected to arrive off the coast of the devastated city of Port-au-Prince today to help relief organizations get supplies to earthquake survivors. They'll also be reinforcing 1,000 U.S. troops now on the ground there.
So for more on Haiti, we're going to be talking with reporters from the BBC. Their team on the ground has remarkable stories of individual cases of needing help and getting help over the course of the last 3 days. We're going to be speaking with them in just a moment. But the big story here at home is the special election for the late Ted Kennedy's Senate seat in Massachusetts. Little-known Republican state senator Scott Brown has drawn even with Democratic candidate Martha Coakley. It's unexpected, and a lot could be on the line here. It could determine if Democrats keep their 60-vote majority so crucial for health care reform. President Obama traveled to Boston yesterday to support the Democrat.
Martha's going to make sure you get your money back. She's got your back. Her opponent's got Wall Street's back.
Senate Minority Leader Republican Mitch McConnell says the stakes in Massachusetts are high for Republicans as well.
This is, in effect, a referendum on the national health care bill.
A Brown win would give the Republicans 41 Senate votes, enough to filibuster the health care reform bill.
And at the Golden Globes last night, Avatar won Best Film Drama, while James Cameron took home Best Director. Other winners include Meryl Streep as Julia Child in Julia and Julia.
Her seventh win.
Seventh win.
Yeah, that's, she's won six. She's been nominated like 25 times, something like that.
What an amazing career. And Robert Downey Jr. for Sherlock Holmes. Five Americans being held in Pakistan on suspicion of terrorism claim they're being tortured or have been tortured. The five Muslims shouted such comments to reporters Monday as they were being driven from court. Police and prison authorities are denying any mistreatment, however. The five Americans were detained in December after being accused of plotting terror attacks in Pakistan and having links to Al-Qaeda.
And earlier on the program, we talked to a BBC correspondent, Rob Watson, who said it's possible that a pattern in Britain of British-born Pakistanis being involved in terrorist incidents might be replicated in the United States, and that's something we're definitely paying attention
that's
to.
That's a scary thought.
Asian markets down, European indices up slightly. Here at home, Wall Street is closed for the MLK holiday, and in honor of Martin Luther King Jr., we're going to take a look at the music of the civil rights movement a little later this hour with actor Danny Glover and music producer Corey Smith, who collaborated on a documentary soundtrack for a revolution. That's later in the hour. Today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and here's some of that soundtrack.
So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
We all have dreams, but Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s dreams are a part of American history. We're asking, what's the next step for the civil rights movement in America? Where are we lacking as a nation, and what more do we need to do to fulfill Dr. King's dream? Tell us your take at 877-8-MY-TAKE or leave a comment on our website, takeaway.org. Coming up, stories from Haiti. And I'm here in the studio with Miles O'Brien, who is in for the vacationing Celeste Headlee here on this holiday. Good morning, Miles.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Two numbers for you. Mm-hmm. 12,000 and 100,000. 12,000, that's the number of U.S. troops that are expected to be on the ground by the end of the day in Port-au-Prince and in Haiti to deal with the relief effort. But 100,000 is the expected death toll, and it's probably going to rise even above that.
It's difficult to get your hands around the magnitude of this one.
Yeah, well, Nick Davis joins us from the BBC, our partner, who have a whole team on the ground in Haiti and have had that team on the ground through the weekend. Nick, first of all, is there a likelihood that 12,000 U.S. troops is going to increase the visibility of the relief effort? What do you think?
I'd say so. I mean, at the moment, I'm not sure if you can hear it on air, but there's a helicopter, a U.S. military helicopter, hovering not far away. It's a visible presence like that, which will, in many cases, make the security of the teams operating here, not only military but civilian, a whole lot easier.
And, you know, we were actually in some discussions earlier on in the program about this notion that we've heard in media reports that security is likely to deteriorate, might deteriorate as the pace of the relief effort seems to be so slow so far. What are you getting? Because we're also hearing from Haitians who say, no, it's going to be fine. Haitians are good at working these things out.
Very much so. I have to say that so far my experience has been that the Haitians have been a most resilient people in terms of what they're dealing with. Maybe because of the fact that they've gone through this sort of scenario, not an earthquake of this magnitude, not a death toll of this magnitude either, and it is huge, as you said, 100,000, up to 100,000 expected to be dead. But people are somehow finding a way to cope. While the aid isn't getting through, Haitians are doing it for themselves. They're actually just going out there and trying to survive. The way they have done in the past, the international community hasn't actually... they've put in a lot, but even so, this country has always needed a lot of work to be done, and they just go out and try and survive the best they can.
Well, Nick Davis, BBC reporter, thanks so much. On the ground live there from Port-au-Prince, Haiti. And really, that's the story this morning, that resilience, the sense of people taking matters into their own hand. The stories are grimly repetitive, yet each of them unforgettable. People who lost so much in the first shocks of last week's earthquake clinging to life as the relief effort moves forward at an agonizingly slow pace. I want you to listen for the sadness in our colleague, BBC reporter Mark Doyle's voice, as he comes upon a man here who is in Haiti for an already tragic reason and who has no idea how to put back the pieces of his life now.
My name is Wiss Mattis. I'm living in New York, so I'm here for the funeral of my mother. The funeral was last Saturday. Then the scene is happened on Tuesday. I lost my wife.
I'm sorry.
And I buried my wife yesterday. So I'm planning to go now. I don't have no passport, no nothing, you know, and I want to go.
If you want to tell me what happened in your house and...
At my house?
Yes.
Oh, well, I was at my house at the time, you know, the thing happened. Then I was right here, but outside there, when the thing happened, you know, when I hear the, boom, you know, just like a bulldozer, you know? And I run down there and...
And your wife was inside the house?
Yeah. My wife and my cousin, I don't know. Oh, just about, I don't know, God. Believe me, that's God. And... Right after that, my wife passed away after 2 days.
So she was hit by the rubble that fell?
Yeah,
and
the top off.
She was very badly injured, and then she died subsequently?
She died right away. And
right away. Any medical attention here? Any nurses?
Nothing at all. Nothing at all. We don't have no aid, no nothing at all. No food, no water, no medical, no doctor, nothing at all. You are the first one who visit us, sir.
You were the first one to visit us. That's Mark Doyle visiting for the first time, a man waiting for help, telling his tragic story. The BBC has a whole team on the ground, each one with story after story of this kind of resilience of Haitians dealing with the aftermath of last week's earthquake. We take you now to a story from the BBC's Mike Thompson.
An elderly woman approaches me in a particularly poor and devastated suburb of Port-au-Prince. Her face contorted with a mixture of anger and pain.
I'm very hungry. We all in the same situation. Our home has been destroyed. We don't have anywhere to sleep. Don't you see where we're sleeping? We don't have any food to give the children. We wish they could help us. The smell of these dead bodies are killing us. I believe the germs of these dead bodies are going to make all of us sick.
This feeling of neglect is common here, despite pledges from countries around the world to come to Haiti's aid.
Hard to find water. We don't have electricity, and living is very hard.
Can you tell me what help you've had so far? Because there are quite a lot of soldiers here now. What help have they given you?
We didn't find help from them yet.
Have you had any help at all here?
No, right now, no. Right now, no.
Nothing.
We don't have nothing ourselves. Nothing.
We leave you with this final story from the BBC's Mike Thompson, a neighborhood finding itself in the rubble.
A man in his 30s, wearing a bright but dusty yellow shirt, leads me through a small, rubble-strewn alley, littered by fallen masonry and twisted metal cables. Suddenly, he stops.
Over there's some people who are trying to take some dead bodies from that house. They've been doing this some hours before we pass here.
How many people have you lost in the community here?
We cannot reckon, there's a lot. We don't know how much about people we've lost, because there's a lot of people under the houses that crashed down, you know?
Do you think any of the people still trapped might be alive?
I don't know if they're alive, because we was looking for some survivors, but we didn't hear none from them. All we find is dead bodies, and we take them out, so they might be sticking in a time, so they might be decomposing. So that's why we take them out, and we just put them out.
First, I see a small woman's shoe, and then what looks like a foot protrudes from under a cracked concrete slab. I listen, but can hear no signs of life from beneath the rubble.
I've seen so many people who pass away in front of my eyes, you know, so many dead people. And so right now, all we need is help. We need help. We're crying for help.
The BBC's Mike Thompson witnessing, as his colleagues and all of us are, the tragedy in Haiti. And now at 15 minutes after the hour, let's check in on some of the other stories that we're following, Miles.
More U.S. Marines are expected to arrive off the coast of Port-au-Prince today. They'll be reinforcing troops already on the ground. Lieutenant General Ken Keene of U.S. Southern Command says conditions on the ground remain difficult.
We've had incidents of violence that impede our ability to support the government of Haiti.
In Afghanistan, the streets of Kabul were a battlefield this morning. 20 armed Taliban militants, some wearing suicide vests, tried to storm the presidential palace and other government buildings. A number of people were killed. Situation ongoing. We're following it.
It's also ongoing in Ukraine, where the presidential election there is going to go into a runoff. And here at home, the race to succeed Ted Kennedy is down to the wire in Massachusetts. Democrats and Republicans have flooded the state to boost the turnout of voters in their favor. On Fox News yesterday, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said the Massachusetts Senate race is close for one reason only.
If it's unpopular in Massachusetts, it's unpopular everywhere. The American people don't want us to pass this bill.
More popular, James Cameron's epic science fiction film Avatar. It was voted best film drama at yesterday's Golden Globe Awards. Some insiders said the award added momentum to the movie's Oscar hopes. That's a look at some of the stories we're watching this morning. What's coming up?
Coming up, in commemorating the work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we are going to speak to a former Tuskegee Airman about the past, present, and future of American civil rights and that movement. That's in just a few moments. Stay with us.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
Hey, you want that to go?
And at the news takeout counter this Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. holiday morning, is Louise Story from our partner, the New York Times, and Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, sports contributor for The Takeaway.
Good morning
to both of you. And we begin with actually, it's a dirty word among economists, stagflation. We have some indication that possibly, we may be we may be having some trouble in the business community because inflation actually isn't pushing prices up, and that can be both a good thing and a bad thing.
So we've had a lot of different worries, John, this year. You know, inflation, deflation, what's happening? It's all very murky. The figures that came out on Friday, the inflation figures, showed that inflation was up 2.7% last year. And when you take out food and energy, which are sometimes taken out because, you know, energy can spike, it's 1.8%. So that paints, you know, very low inflation. But another way that people were cutting the numbers, and you can cut them a lot of different ways, is people were looking at the average of the index last year.
Right.
And when you average the index, it was 0.4% lower than the average of the index the year before, which hasn't happened since the 50s. So it's kind of murky.
And murky in the sense that inflation is good. Low inflation is good because prices stay low. But if businesses can't raise their prices, that means business activity is going to stay limp. And that's a sign of continuing recession.
Right. So what's happening is actually people are buying. You know, Christmas sales are up to some degree. But the prices people are paying are low. It's got to be a mega sale these days. For anyone to buy anything, it's just got to be a mega sale. And so manufacturers have reacted to this by really cutting down their capacity because buying, you know, and prices are low. And so one of the fears is if consumer demand comes back and people are ready to buy, then there won't be enough manufacturing capacity ready to go to supply all the stuff. And so there will not be enough goods. And so therefore, prices might go up in that scenario.
Low capacity,
right.
Low supply, high demand, boom.
Prices. You know, remember, you remember the
yeah.
graph from economics?
I feel
economics.
Like I just had an economics lesson. But
you know,
I
it's,
get
all,
it. Yeah,
it's always
true.
Good.
Yeah.
Stick with it. Louise Story, finance reporter for our partner in the New York Times. Right. Thanks, Louise.
Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen is here. A little sports action. And Minnesota versus New Orleans, Saints and Vikings, Favre. The man from actually who grew up rooting for the Saints, right?
In the Bayou. He
yeah,
grew up in
I mean
the
that's
bayou,
his, that's right? his team. This is going to be a great game.
Well, there's a lot of storylines in this one.
Yeah.
With the Cowboys losing to the Vikings, and let me just be clear,
humiliated.
34-3 was the score. Most everyone thought that the Cowboys were the team to beat in this year's playoff. So their tectonic loss this weekend really shifted the balance a little bit, and it was mainly because Brett Favre. But that's not to take back away from the Vikings' number two defense in the league. So guys like Jared Allen coming off the end who are just abusing quarterbacks. And that's what I'm sort of gauging a little bit to as a predictor for what's going to happen with Drew Brees. Mind you,
the quarterback for the Saints.
Now, they've never had a game this big in New Orleans ever. So there is a Saints nation. Right. There is a Saints. There's a lot of
That's
energy
there's
after
a,
Katrina.
Kind of an America's team
exactly.
quality to the Saints.
So there's a lot of energy feeding into
but
this
But we all
one.
Love Favre.
And we
you
do
know,
love
especially
Favre.
Old guys like me.
So this is a classic game because he's the oldest quarterback ever at this point. So I'm going to go with the Saints in this one. Because I think, and I'm going to go with the Jets against the Colts. The reason why is because I think history is going to be, this is a little shift in history. And I think we're going to have Jets, Saints, and the Super Bowl for
Jets
the ages.
Jets and Saints. Wow.
Every combo is good in this foursome.
Without a doubt.
Right?
The storylines have been all
even
over.
If it's Jets, Favre, Jets, Vikings, that would be good. You have the number one and the number two defenses
Precisely.
Going up against
That would be a great one. Even if you have Peyton Manning going into where his dad, Archie, used to play, going against the Saints.
And that's what people have been saying since mid-season.
From
it's going to be Colts, Saints.
Precisely.
So that's the favorite.
So that is the favorite, but I'm not going to go with the favorite. I'm going to have the New York bias and go with the Jets against the Saints.
The Jets, Saints.
And the reason why the Saints. And
Jets
not,
all the way is what you're saying. But that's just hometown stuff,
Precisely.
Right?
Yeah. But I'm saying but also the Vikings.
Delusional.
The Vikings because of their defense and not because of Brett Favre. Remember
oh,
that.
Oh, okay. All right. That's good. Well, were we recording when he was saying that?
I sure
all
hope
right.
so.
Very good.
You're on the hook, Ibrahim.
Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen.
Thank you, sir.
Sports contributor. Our last takeout is to mark Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which we're all doing here on The Takeaway, right? Mm-hmm. This weekend, our partner station, WNYC Radio, hosted a celebration for the holiday at the Brooklyn Museum in New York, and our own Celeste Headlee co-hosted the event. And this morning, we're bringing you some of the civil rights activists and educators that she spoke to.
My name is Patricia Williams. I am a professor of law at Columbia University Law School, and I also write a column for The Nation magazine entitled Diary of a Mad Law Professor.
So as a professor, you obviously come in contact constantly with the next generation who are going to be graduating college and setting out on their own. And what do you tell them? What is the next great battle for civil rights?
Well, I think that the next battle of civil rights is going to be a technological one. It's going to be about DNA collection. It's going to be about surveillance and cameras. I think there's also going to be a push for the internationalization of the civil rights movement, as well as for the diversification of the civil rights movement, which includes not simply the old black-white model, but also the question of a variety of people of color, minorities, including religious and ethnic minorities, linguistic minorities, and I think also immigration rights are going, as the resources of the planet become more and more in question or limited, I think that that's our borders are going to be the frontier of the civil rights movement.
That was Professor Patricia Williams, a law professor at Columbia University Law School, talking to our co-host, Celeste Headley.
My old friend Martin, can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seemed good they die young.
Where do you think the dream Martin Luther King Jr. had stands at this point in the 21st century? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. Coming up, the battle for John F. Kennedy's, the John in that song, Senate seat.
Now, Scott Brown is Curt Schilling, okay?
Another Yankee fan.
Schilling?
Yes.
Curt Schilling, a Yankee fan?
No. All right, Curt Schilling,
Red Sox.
Martha Coakley, struggling in Massachusetts, and everything's on the line. Healthcare reform, perhaps the entire Obama agenda, coming up in a few minutes.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Welcome back. I'm Miles O'Brien, in for Celeste on vacation this week. Coming up, we're going to take a look at how Massachusetts' special Senate election could have a big effect on health care. That's kind of an understatement. And the strength of the National Democratic Party all in one election. That story is coming up in just a few moments. Here's some of the news stories we're following for you at 39 minutes after the hour. The worldwide effort to rescue battered Haiti entered its second week today, with thousands of frustrated Haitians saying they are still waiting for food, water, and medical care. The United Nations World Food Program plans to distribute 200 tons of food today. That's enough for about 100,000 people. Despite this kind of effort, survivors continue to tell tales of neglect in the days after the earthquake. Things are improving today, however. The 82nd Airborne has arrived. Its 900 troops will focus on restoring security to Port-au-Prince. Meanwhile, the aid group Doctors Without Borders says the main problem keeping relief supplies from reaching the people is a bottleneck at the airport. Spokesman Dr. Greg Elder says the few medical facilities and personnel aren't anywhere near enough.
We're all just overwhelmed. We've got, lists of 300, 400 people waiting for surgery, and the shortage is just having enough operating blocks and enough surgeons to do the work.
Traffic at the airport continues to improve, however, 100 planes now flying in and out each day.
Big headline in Afghanistan this morning. We're listening to the sound of gunfire echoing in the streets of Kabul after a group of armed Taliban militants tried to storm the presidential palace and other government buildings. They took up positions on rooftops before Afghan troops were able to take control of the situation, but it was hours later. 5 people killed, 40 wounded. 7 of the attackers were also killed. The situation continues. Here at home, an influential doctors panel says obese children would benefit from intensive behavior treatment if they need to lose weight. The new advice from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force says most children should be screened for obesity and given rigorous diet and behavior therapy programs. Look at the markets now. Asian markets were down this morning. European indices up slightly, but Wall Street is closed for the holidays. And those are some of the stories we're following this morning.
Tomorrow, Massachusetts voters will go to the polls to fill the Senate seat long held by Senator Ted Kennedy. Now, the latest polls show the Democratic candidate, Attorney General, the state Attorney General, Martha Coakley, could snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. She is slightly leading Republican State Senator Scott Brown. Very small margin there. A lot of people say it was a lackluster campaign. And worse of all, she insulted the Red Sox nation by saying Curt Schilling was a Yankees fan. I mean, in Massachusetts, you just don't do that. It is important because this is a seat that will determine whether the party preserves a 60-vote majority in the Senate needed to keep the health care legislation and the rest of the president's agenda alive. You know, the irony here is that Ted Kennedy's death could mean the end of health care reform.
Indeed, and that is a huge historical irony there.
Anyway, Democrats are pulling out all the stops, to say the least, including robocalls from, listen to this.
This is President Barack Obama. I rarely make these calls, and I truly apologize for intruding on your day. But I had to talk to you about the election in Massachusetts on Tuesday. because the stakes are so high.
Wow. I didn't get one of those calls.
Yeah, well, Christopher Lydon might have. He joins us now. He's a longtime political reporter in Massachusetts, host of the radio Open Source. Chris, good to have you on the program. Also, our takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick is with us. He'll be with him in a second. First of all, Chris, did you get one of those calls?
I stopped answering the phone for anybody but you. No, I had about 8 calls from everybody and nobody on this kind of stuff, and I stopped answering. But so they're all over the place.
Yeah, I guess so. So now everybody outside of Massachusetts would assume that Martha Coakley, it was, you know, a coronation. And suddenly this, you know, to us, little known state senator comes out of nowhere, seemingly. What really happened?
It's complicated, but I would just say Massachusetts is in a sort of frenzy. Massachusetts is ticked, wicked ticked, we would say. And
but we probably shouldn't say that on the radio. Can we say
three,
that? Wicked,
three things.
Yeah.
There's a Kennedy grief still going on. It's in sort of Kubler-Ross process of denial, anger. He shouldn't have died. Joe should have run. Teddy Jr. should have run. We've been abandoned this 60-plus year history of Camelot politics is over. People are upset about it. There's also a tremendous disappointment, I got to say, in Barack Obama. No public option. We're still at war in Afghanistan. What's the deal? The health care bill is not, I don't think, what Teddy would have settled for in the end. And then there's this teabaggery, which nobody knows quite how to define, but it's real. There's a frenzy up here. And
well, in Massachusetts, they know something about teabags, right? That goes way back there.
Right.
It goes way back.
There's a legitimacy deep down about this kind of throw the bums out. There's a lot of hackery in the kind of suppression of all this anger. I mean, all the regular Pauls are out there saying, you know, do this for Teddy, do this for Martha or something. And yet there's a kind of clear emptiness about it, too. There's a certain frenzy. I've never seen Massachusetts quite so close to the edge of weirdness, complete weirdness, as we feel it right now.
All right. Well, let's bring Todd in. Todd Zwillick, let's put this in the national context. First of all, let's over the weekend, the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, said this.
This is, in effect, a referendum on the national health care bill.
True or false, Todd?
Well, from Mitch McConnell's perspective and the Republicans' perspective, it's probably true because that's their A number one priority in Washington is to derail the health care bill. So if Coakley loses and the Democrats lose their 60-vote majority, of course the Republicans will say that the health care bill, Barack Obama's number one domestic agenda item and the Democrats' number one item, has lost its legitimacy. Now, whether or not the Democrats are derailed by this, it's going to be a sort of a game of chicken, a waiting game between the authorities in Massachusetts, the Secretary of State there, who is a guy named William Francis Galvin. I have a feeling if Coakley loses, if Scott Brown wins, you're going to be hearing the name William Francis Galvin. Repeat that to yourself.
Boy, that's
a lot in the next 10 days.
Well, what can he do? Yeah. What can he do?
Well, here's the deal with this. The health care bill, as we know, John and Miles, are in the final stages of negotiation between House and Senate leaders in the White House. When they get a final bill, it has to go back to the Senate for that final vote of 60 and then back to the House. If they lose this, if the Democrats lose this race, they no longer have 60, but Brown would not be a senator until he's sworn in. How long will it take for him to get sworn in? They have said it would take up to 10 days to certify the results. You've got to count the absentee ballots. You now have sort of a game of chicken between getting these negotiations done and getting it back to the Senate for that final vote of 60 versus the Dems losing their majority, and it's down to the wire with
that. That's a crazy scenario. So, Christopher Lydon, what did you say before Todd mentioned that? That Massachusetts is on the verge of complete weirdness? If that happened, that would be complete weirdness, right?
Yeah, it is very weird. The games with seating Scott Brown, if he won, are too complicated to imagine. But I don't know. There's also a good chance that he will lose. I mean, nobody really knows, and I don't make predictions.
Chris, how much of this is Coakley's fault? She's run a lackluster campaign, and then she had the temerity to diss Curt Schilling on the radio.
Yeah, all business is local. You're not supposed to mispronounce names or affiliations or this kind of thing. And that's, I that just brings to the surface a kind of awkwardness about this lady, a prosecutor, lawyer, very oftentimes wooden person. I don't know. I think a lot of Democrats are wishing one of those other guys, Mike Capuano, the congressman, or even Alan Casey, the big citizen insurgent, you know, do-good guy from outside politics, had won the nomination.
All right. Well, Chris Lydon, maybe you should run up there.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Oh, jeez. Great. All right. Encourage him.
Yes. Yeah, Christopher Lydon, Todd Zwillick, thanks very much for telling us about the craziness in Massachusetts.
Coming up to commemorate Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we're going to take a look at the soundtrack of the Civil Rights Movement. It's actually a documentary, and we're going to have actor Danny Glover and Corey Smith, who collaborated on that documentary, with us. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Miles O'Brien, filling in for Celeste Headlee. Last night, the TV and movie stars mingled and the alcohol flowed freely, and I was at home. Golden Globe Awards were handed out.
One-step program, the Golden Globes.
I want to thank all the little people. Our movie contributor, Rafer Guzman, watched, of course. He was up late, and he's here to tell us what he thought about the big night. His predictions from Friday came true, right?
No, actually. No. I did pretty badly.
I was trying to give you the benefit of the doubt there. You could have picked at least one. Let's, first of all, talk about the host, because we always like to Ricky Gervais. Let's listen to, he had to do the obligatory late-night comedian joke. Let's listen.
Of course.
Let's get on with it before NBC replaced me with Jay Leno.
kind of low-hanging fruit, but what the heck? How did he do?
I thought he did pretty well. I mean, I think he was there. You know, it's the first time they've had a host since about 15 years, I think. And I think he was there to sort of increase the unpredictability factor. I think he did a pretty good job. He
good behavior, bad behavior. You don't want it to be too good on the behavior.
Yeah, that's
either,
right. That's right. Yeah, he got some good digs in at Paul McCartney, making fun of him flying coach because veiled reference to his loss of money from his divorce, and good dig in at Mel Gibson for his recent DUI. So he scored a few barbs.
Did
in
the
there.
Cameron Bigelow marriage, former marriage, come up at all?
It did
no.
not.
They
did
didn't
not.
Go
maybe,
there.
Maybe,
you
maybe
wondered
too
if
inside
they would.
Baseball. Yeah,
so that might be third rail or inside baseball. I don't know. TV categories. Did the right people win?
TV categories. I was mostly focused on the movies. I wasn't following, but I know that that Glee did pretty well, which beating out 30 Rock and Entourage, and Mad Men did well. Although I was surprised to see that Michael C. Hall won for Dexter over John Hamm in the Mad Men for the Best Actor category.
Yeah.
That
kind of
surprised
cancer,
me.
Right now?
Yeah, he wore a black cap, probably to cover his head.
All right, what about movies? Your predictions versus what happened?
Well, do I get any points for predicting the best foreign language film?
Yes, you do. Yes,
sure.
yes.
10
okay,
points.
All right.
Well,
that's reach
points.
For it, go for it, embrace it.
That's something. That's something. Well, I had picked Up in the Air for Best Picture, right. and I had picked Catherine Bigelow for Best Director.
From Hurt Locker.
From Hurt Locker, right. Thinking they would split the vote. Wrong on both counts.
You didn't
Avatar.
See Avatar coming, huh?
I didn't see Avatar coming. Yeah. I don't think I was alone. I think a lot of people were a little surprised by that. I do think it was the right choice, given the competition.
Do you?
Yeah,
really?
I was a huge fan of Avatar. I thought it was a great movie and broke a lot of new ground technologically, obviously. But I thought it was a good movie, and I was glad to see it win.
And, of course, in that case, if you give the movie the nod, you almost have to give Jim Cameron the nod, because he's so in it. Let's listen to him briefly.
This is the best job in the world. You know, it just really is. I just want you to give it up for yourself. We all have the best job in the world.
He's the king of the world.
I think I hate him. there's something so annoying about that.
Not what you call
$1 billion.
Not a humble guy, but
to say the least.
I think also one of the big surprises was the best comedy picture, which I think most people would have said Julie and Julia, and Hangover won. And that really surprised me, because here's just sort of a crass box office hit over a Meryl Streep comedy.
I would put it in a Golden Globe category. I enjoyed the movie. But,
that's great.
I mean, jeez.
But Meryl Streep. Big shocker.
Yeah, big shocker. Yeah. Winning for Julie and Julia, right? Right. Competing against herself for It's Complicated.
Her seventh.
She was going to win one way or the other.
All right, Rafer Guzman, thanks very much. He's the film critic at Newsday.
And a great aficionado of foreign language films.
Indeed.
Did you know?
Yes. Indeed. Oui, oui.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning to you. I'm Miles O'Brien, in for Celeste Headlee on vacation here with John Hockenberry, who's working hard on this MLK Day. Coming up, the soundtrack of the Civil Rights Movement.
Yeah, we'll hear the revolution was televised and had a soundtrack.
But right now, let's check the stories we're watching for you at now 43 minutes. This is hard for me.
47.
All this math at this hour is very hard for me. Can't even tell time. In Afghanistan, a group of Taliban militants attacked Kabul this morning. Police at the scene said the attack began with a suicide bombing in the downtown area. The Afghan Health Ministry says at least five people were killed. Here's a reaction from U.S. Special Envoy in Afghanistan, Richard Holbrooke.
It's not surprising that the Taliban do this sort of thing. They're desperate people. They're ruthless. The people who are doing this certainly will not survive the attack, nor will they succeed. But we can expect this sort of thing on a regular basis. That is who the Taliban are.
Meanwhile, the suffering continues in Haiti today with an occasional glimmer of hope. A UN spokeswoman says more than 1,700 rescue workers have saved over 70 lives since the quake on Tuesday. Late last night, U.S. teams with search dogs rescued a 16-year-old Dominican girl trapped for 5 days in a collapsed hotel. What a survival story that is. Mm. Rick Santos was buried beneath the rubble of another of Haiti's hotels. He said he experienced a wide range of emotions before being rescued.
Despair and the elation were at different moments. And, you know, I think when it first hit, we were like, okay, we're trapped, but we're alive. And that's something. And so now the question is, how do you stay alive?
Tragedy in Haiti continuing. Some election news around the world. We begin in the United States. President Obama was in Massachusetts to rally Democratic candidate for Senate Martha Coakley.
What Martha's opponent is preaching, we've already tried. And it didn't work.
Her race in Massachusetts is too close to call, and at stake could be the 60th vote on health care reform. The special election is on Tuesday. Billionaire Sebastian Piñera won Chile's presidency yesterday. It was the country's first democratic election of a right-wing ruler in 52 years. And in the Ukraine, the presidential election there is going to a runoff. According to official results, opposition leader Viktor Yanukovych leads Yulia Tymoshenko by more than 10 percentage points. And those are some of the stories we're following this morning.
Nameless bodies you will find.
It happens every Martin Luther King Day. You hear the I Have a Dream speech and you get those goosebumps listening
every
to those
time.
Iconic words, the iconic sounds, the cadence of his voice. But there were lots of cadences during the Civil Rights Movement. There's actually a soundtrack to the movement. The songs of the time, both protest songs, the songs that come out of a much earlier period in time, and actually songs that remember what Dr. King did, became popular songs in the United States. The soundtrack to the revolution is something my pal Danny Glover knows really well. Actor Danny Glover, good morning.
How you doing, John? How's it going?
It's going great. The Civil Rights Movement has a soundtrack, right?
Yeah, of course it does. You know, all movements do. And this movement has a particular soundtrack, inspiring people in the midst of moments that seem to be dark and while marching in jail. It's quite extraordinary. We're very happy about this.
Well, and it's worth remembering on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Danny Glover is the executive producer of a documentary called Soundtrack for a Revolution, where today's pop stars remake, it's more than just covering music that was a central part of the civil rights movement, and his collaborator, Danny Glover's collaborator, is Corey Smith, right here in the studio, music producer of that film, Soundtrack to a Revolution. Corey, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, Corey and Danny, how did you decide, first of all, what music to pick? And Corey, let me begin with, it's not just music we're talking about here. We're talking about sounds of the revolution as well as music. And of course, with the sampling technology of today, you've got it all to choose from. Listen to this.
We put his body on a mule train. We were walking along beside, and we sang all of the songs of the movement.
That's Andy Young speaking about Martin Luther King Jr.'s funeral. Corey, what was it like to use that historical material to interview people from the time and work with the music?
It was a beautiful thing. What we did was we... Bill and Dan had a list of songs from their interviews that we ended up choosing from and selecting certain artists that we felt fit the songs best.
So. No, and when you say Bill and Dan, you mean...
Bill and Dan were the directors of the film.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So we were able to, at that point, find voices that we fit, that fit certain songs, and also certain contemporary artists that we felt like would be beneficial.
Well, so the song behind Andy Young speaking there was Woke Up This Morning, mm-hmm. and you got John Legend
Correct.
To do his own version. Listen to this.
I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on freedom. I woke up this
morning.
So, Corey,
what did these artists bring to this? What kind of enthusiasm? Because many of them, you know, were born after a lot of the events here, including, I suspect, yourself.
Yeah, myself was included. Yeah. It was one of those things where a lot of the artists tend to be familiar with the songs through church. Like, John was very familiar with this song through church, through his church upbringing. So he was very excited about doing this. You know, John actually flew himself out to do this song on his own dime.
Wow.
You know?
Danny Glover, is this a way of bridging time for people who experienced the civil rights movement, for people who only know it historically and through holidays like this?
Well, I think what's important is that we understand this movement, and the music is really a wonderful intro for young people with contemporary artists to understand the power of music, the power of song, and that certainly is evident in any movement. The civil rights movement, given that long journey from slavery to abolition of slavery through the dark years of segregation, etc., the music here resonates. It's a powerful legacy of struggle.
It really compresses time. Phil Oakes wrote the tune Here's to the State of Mississippi as a protest tune, but Wyclef Jean actually does this version in the movie.
Here's to the state of Mississippi, for underneath her borders, the devil draws no lines.
You know, what's brilliant about this song, Corey, is he keeps the guitar feel of Phil Oakes,
yeah,
but gives it a totally different feel.
Yeah, you know, he really sat down that day and decided, okay, I wanted to, he was going to actually, you know, redo something in a very unique way. And we were trying our best to not go too far, but you know, allow people to feel, the young people to feel very much, you know, renewed when they hear this these songs in a certain way.
Corey, and then I'm going to ask Danny Glover, and we've got one more song to go out on, but do you have a favorite song of the soundtrack of the Civil Rights Movement?
I'll say one of my favorites is the Roots tune.
The Roots tune?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, hold that thought, because we got it right here. Danny Glover, what's your favorite tune of the soundtrack from a Revolution?
Well, certainly the Blind Boys singing, I may not be there. We may not see each other again. I can't remember that first opening.
Yeah, yeah.
Song.
No. Well, the Blind Boys are incredible,
and
all the songs from the movie are on our website, thetakeaway.org. But let's go out on "Ain't Gonna Let Nobody Turn Me Around."
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I just keep on walking, keep on talking.
Now, that tune's been done so many different ways, Corey Smith. That version by The Roots has sort of every quality, the laid-back Southern feel, but the intensity.
Yeah, indeed. You know, it's a very unique thing to see Tariq, the lead singer of The Roots, who normally raps, actually come in and actually sing that song. So yeah. I was very happy. And also the guys from TV on the Radio, another group, actually sang the background vocals. So it was beautiful.
Well, Corey Smith, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Corey Smith is a music producer of the new film Soundtrack to a Revolution, and Danny Glover is the actor and, of course, the executive producer of that new film. Danny, thanks so much for being with us. Happy MLK Day.
Take care.
All right, Danny.
Bye now.
All right, that's a great sound. Just bring
that
up, Jay.
Bring it up.
I can't let segregation turn me around.
All right. From the soundtrack to the revolution to the man who is leading it.
I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
It's Martin Luther King Jr. in his famous and final speech talking about the Promised Land in honor of Dr. King's life and work. We're asking, has America made it to the Promised Land? What more do we have to accomplish to fulfill Dr. King's dream? Tell us your take, 877-8-MY-TAKE. Or leave a comment on our website, thetakeaway.org.
I'm John Hockenberry. Miles O'Brien, thanks for being with us. This is The Takeaway.
Thanks for listening to The Takeaway podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.